from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It is, in fact, a new episode of the Craig Needles podcast. And of course, we're brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. And we're talking housing on the podcast this week. I know healthcare is going to be the big story here in the province of Ontario today. And we're talking about the throne speech. We're going to do an episode on that a little bit later in the week. But I want to talk about housing today, and I am thrilled to be joined on the podcast by economist Mike Moffitt, who's been on this show many times. You know Mike, you know his work, and Earl Blaney, who is with the Canada Network, joining us on the podcast as well. Thank you very much, both of you, for being on the podcast with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Earl, I'll start with you, just sort of a little background. Tell us about yourself and your work and how that fits into the immigration sphere here in Canada.
Yeah, sure. Thanks very much, Craig, for having me. So I run a company called the Canada Network here in London, Ontario. We also have an office in the Philippines. The main thing we do, I'm a licensed immigration consultant and all that good stuff. Basically, our focus, our area of expertise is international student, bringing them into the country and to pre-screening them to make sure that they have the ability to attain permanent residency before they start to make this massive financial commitment. So we deal, of course, with a lot of Fanshawe students and mainly Fanshawe students, some Western, here in London, and have just kind of over the years, we've been back in Canada doing this now for about 5 years, and seeing some of the troubles these students are having, both during studies and post-graduation is keeping me on my toes, to say the least.
So we don't have enough housing now, and I suspect that means we're going to have even more not enough housing later. And Mike, I saw you tweeting about housing targets that we have earlier today and how these are woefully short. And it's all well and good to say, hey, this is how many homes we want to build, but there isn't any planning that goes along with that. Do you think that government decision makers are factoring in that these post-secondary institutions are hoping to get international students into their doors when they're making these plans, when they're talking about these projections?
Yeah, it's tough to tell. It certainly doesn't show up in their official municipal plans, or at least they pay lip service to it. And we have a classic Canadian problem here where we have three different levels of government who all sort of own this issue, at least partly, but not wholly. So right now we've got provincial and federal governments who have set housing targets. The federal government says that they want to double housing completions over the next decade. Provincial government says that they want 1.5 million new housing units over the next decade, which is a doubling of the 750,000 or so we had the previous decade. So we've got these two targets. Well, at the same time, every municipality needs to update their official plan, including London with the London plan. I spent a fair bit of time going through these in a variety of Ontario municipalities. And if you add up from a municipal point of view, like how many houses London says it's going to build and Mississauga and Toronto and Ottawa, you're not going to get a number that's anywhere near 1.5 million. You might get something less half of that. So we have this situation where the province has set one target, but municipalities are setting much lower targets when you add them all together. So, you know, the parts don't equal the whole. And our hope at Smart Prosperity Institute is that the provincial government kind of steps in and says, okay, guys, you know, we can't have municipal official plans that add up to a much lower target than what we're trying to accomplish at the province.
Mike, we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon. Did you see anything like that in the throne speech that we got today, or anything even approaching that?
No, unfortunately not. So, you know, this reminds me a lot of the climate change debate back in the 90s and thousands, 2000s, where governments were really good at setting emissions targets, but then introduced absolutely no policies to kind of get there. And we're kind of in the same position. So I think where the rubber is going to hit the road is, you know, does the provincial government approve the municipal plans that have been submitted by municipalities to the province, or does the province say, you know, no, you guys have to go back to the drawing board? If the province does that, they are picking a fight with a variety of municipalities, and I don't know what their appetite for that fight is.
And Earl, why are you concerned about how that would wind up making an impact in practical terms? Because as you said, hey, we're looking to get this number of people from this number of countries to come to school at, to use the London example, at Western, at Fanshawe. And if there's nowhere for them to live, that seems bad to me. You know, I'm not an expert, but that doesn't seem good.
Well, Mike mentioned that, you know, it's uncertain if these, you know, this factor is built into any kind of planning. And I would strongly suggest it's not, because much like Mike said about the housing plan, the government has goals in terms of international student acquisition, but doesn't really have a policy in place to handle it, right? The federal government, as you may have heard, you know, in 2012 announced a really ambitious plan to double the number of international students in Canada. And so they were at about 220,000 back then, and they wanted to get to 450 by 2022, which of course is now. So what happened? Well, actually, the number of international students in Canada is now 820,000. So that's double this ambitious plan. When you look at institutions, you know, medium-sized institutions like Fanshawe, you know, they're gung-ho to cram as many international fee-paying international students as they possibly can on campus. In fact, if you look at their stats from 2018 to 2021, they've doubled the number of study permit applications hitting embassies abroad. Now, most of them are not getting through because of poor quality recruiting on their behalf, in my opinion. But, you know, the number is limitless. In fact, from the latest version of the federal international study plan, they've removed any target whatsoever. So now the target is limitless, evidently. So, yeah, I mean, this is a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, it feels like, and Mike mentioned the, you know, classic Canadian problem. It feels like the left hand has no idea what the right hand's doing, right?
No clue. And so, yeah, you've got, you know, in education, obviously you've got three levels, you know, that are working together on managing this too. The federal government controls the immigration policy. Like, they agree to who gets in and who doesn't and what the terms are. Then you've got the provincial government whose entire agenda is to bring in as many people as they possibly can so they can stop transfer payments to these schools or reduce them even further, supplemented by this international income, right? So, you know, they're definitely not in the best position to be controlling this. And then you got the municipality who's probably just wondering what's going on at this point.
Mike, how do we find a plan that makes sense here? Because like you said, you can't just say, all right, we want to build this number of homes and then expect them to be built. You've got to have a plan to actually make this happen. Where does that plan come from, do you think?
Well, I think leadership there has to come from the province. I do think all levels of government play a role. You know, the federal government has their housing accelerator. But, you know, there's two big bottlenecks to building this many homes. The first is regulatory. So that's issues around zonings and parking minimums and urban growth boundaries and a lot of the fun things that will be discussed in this municipal campaign, at least if we had a big competitive mayoral election, which it doesn't look like we're going to, but nope. In cities that are, you know, those are going to be top of mind issues. So, you know, that those things need to happen. And then the second is on the labor side, you know, just getting the people to actually build these things. You know, the skilled labor was already having issues with attraction and retention, just because we hired or developed so many, you know, sheet metal workers and electricians back in the 70s and 80s, and they're all retiring. So we've already got an issue of sort of keeping employment levels at the level they are. And then all of a sudden, you know, we need to double our housing construction. There's no way we're going to be able to do that with our labor pool. There's no way we're going to be able to do that building houses the way that we're building houses. So that's going to be sort of a monumental challenge. And we need to have, particularly the provincial government, but the federal municipalities as well, have a detailed plan on how they will address both of those bottlenecks. Labor side, I think they're far off. On the regulatory side, I think Ford's housing task force and the 55 recommendations they put in there are a very good blueprint to start. So, you know, I think the Ford government just needs to find the political courage to enact some reforms that may not be popular with a number of municipalities.
There are going to be municipalities who say, hey, we don't want to do this here. And there's going to be the NIMBY influence and all that stuff. But we've got to do this. Like, there just isn't an option unless our plan is, you know, a whole lot more people than right now don't have a place to live. And that seems like a very bad plan to me.
Well, absolutely. And I think what's going to happen is the provincial government says, okay, we need 1.5 million homes. So we need to double it. I've given presentations to probably 10 or 12 different municipalities across Ontario. And the response I always get is, yeah, okay, the province wants to double housing completions, but that doesn't mean we have to do it in our community. I'm like, okay, well, if you're not doubling it, that means some other community has to triple it.
Right.
So you've got the scenario where, you know, they're saying, okay, you know, from a 30,000 foot level, this is fine and we can double it, but no individual community is saying, okay, yeah, we're going to do our share or more than our share. So it's going to be a fight.
Earl, do you think that post-secondary institutions are prepared to change their plans here if there isn't enough housing? Do you think it's something that they can say, oh, wait a minute, maybe we want to pull back? But, you know, you sent me some documentation earlier today. These places have hired a whole lot of recruiting officers. They want to get people into their doors, and that's fine. You know, education institutions should want to be bigger and should want to educate a lot of people. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, there's some practicalities here that I don't know if I want to say they're being ignored, but if we continue on this trajectory, they will be.
Yeah, well, I think post-secondary institutions face with the massive volume increase of international students who are recruited, by the way, not by employees of the school. They're recruited by commissioned agents overseas,
right,
who are not employees. But the bottom line is, and, you know, that's just money driven. Most of those people have never been to London or know what to expect when you get here, of course, but have to present it in a very positive way in terms of what's available. For in terms of facilities, including housing, of course. I think a lot of international students struggle, you know, to find housing. You know, they tend to have networks of people from their own communities here who've come first, and that, you know, the internet is a great place for feedback or whatever. But more and more, what we're finding is these post-secondary institutions like are reducing services, and if not reducing services, maintaining the same levels of services that they've had prior to this massive increase in volume, right? So this just means that less people can be helped. Off-campus housing is no exception to that, right? So, hey, we've got an online bulletin board. Check it yourself. This is the kind of thing that they encounter when they get here. So, you know, moving from, like, you know, first year students will typically live 3-4 in a room in some cases, right? And so that's your introduction to Canada. And then, you know, as time goes on, they may be able to scramble and find their own place if they can afford it, which is a big question mark as prices continue to raise. So I think post-secondary institutions are going to change their plan. No, I think they're going to continue to go as, you know, this for them is primarily about money, despite what they may say about, you know, internationalization being wonderful in all aspects. It's about money. So I don't think they're going to taper down their recruitment goals. In fact, they're rapidly expanding them across the country, especially across this province. So,
right. And when we say it's about money, they can charge international students more than they can charge students who are from Ontario, right? That's kind of the, I know that's really kind of dumbing it down a little bit, but that's generally the case.
Right. So when schools, the Ministry of Colleges and Universities has been decreasing transfer payments for domestic students, it's not a lot, but a few percentage here, a few percentage there year by year in recent history. And whereas international fees have only been going up. Right. So there are cases right now that we're looking at the stats that through access to information, Freedom of Information Act requests, where you will find that many colleges in Canada have an approval rate of like 95-96% for international students, yet domestic we're at 40-45%. So you can see who they favor bringing in. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd add to that as well. I mean, the domestic pool is essentially tapped out. So, you know, if Fanshawe's bringing in more domestic students, it's probably that, you know, Lambton isn't in the sense that, you know, the number of domestic 18-year-olds really isn't increasing all that much. So,
right.
I agree. Demographics is definitely the root cause there for sure, Mike. I agree with you. And also the choice for most Canadians to attend university rather community colleges is a major factor too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, on the domestic side, it's essentially zero sum, but, if you look at the rest of the planet, you got about 7 billion people, right? So if you're a college and you want to grow, you know, you got to fish where the fish are. And then, you know, as Earl points out, on top of that, then you've got tuitions, you know, which are multiples higher. So it's like you have a bigger pool of students to choose from, and they're paying, you know, multiple times higher. It's just such an attractive market. So colleges are not going to turn that down.
No, and nor should they. And we look at developments that have been talked about sort of near Fanshawe College. And, you know, I get it. Sometimes there are reasons that are, you know, infrastructure-wise that you can't do certain things. But I think that it requires some creativity from municipalities like London to say, oh, someone wants to build a big, tall tower that's within a five-minute walk of Fanshawe College. We've got to find a way to make sure that happens because we are going to need that space, right?
And perhaps direct investment from the college itself. I mean, Fanshawe put a record number of money away during COVID-19 based on international students. So what are they doing in terms of contributing to the housing shortage, right? But I mean, something needs to be done there for sure.
Mike, what do you think about sort of the way that municipalities approach housing situations like that one?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely it. I don't understand why when we're doing municipal official plans that they're not putting in or they're not accounting for projected increases in enrollments. Like that should be baked right into the municipal plans. It's like, okay, Fanshawe is going to, you know, their enrollment is going to increase by X. Western's is going to increase by Y. Plus you'll have all the students staying after graduation and working up to 3 years. You know, they can account for these things that every institution has a strategic plan. That strategic plan should be informing the municipal official plans. And right now they're not because, again, it's a classic Canadian problem where we do all these things in silos.
Yeah. So I just wonder, is anyone going to try to solve this problem? And that's my concern. Look, I know we have other problems in the province of Ontario right now. We're going to talk about healthcare later in the week. But is anyone going to try to solve the problem of, hey, yeah, we're trying to fit, you know, X amount thousand students and X more amount thousand people who already live here into Y amount spaces to live in, and X is larger than Y? Like that seems like it's a screaming problem here, and we aren't really being serious enough about it, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's it. I share your concern, and my fear is it turns into a classic Canadian thing where, you know, the provincial government blames the federal one, saying, well, they, you know, they set the rules here, or they blame the municipalities or the colleges and universities. You know, they blame the, you know, the municipalities say, well, it's the province who and the higher education students or higher education institutes who are bringing in all these students. So, you know, it's not our fault. And then, you know, the province just says, well, it's the municipality, but their zoning and approval rules are the reason why we can't get the housing built. So, you know, I'd love to see a coordinated plan. And I fear we're not going to get it. I fear we're just going to have a lot of finger pointing between three levels of government plus a higher education industry rather than working together and trying to fix it. Because there's huge benefits if we can. Like, it's a fantastic thing that, you know, we have so many young, talented, ambitious people who want to call Ontario home. It's a massive opportunity for us. But, you know, we've got to lay down the infrastructure for success, and we're just not doing it.
Earl, what do you think about that? You know, we got a lot of people that want to come here, and that's your line of work, right?
Well, you know, it is. And there would have been a time that I celebrated that for sure. But I'm dealing with the students now at the back end of the process. You know, they all seem to sail through Fanshawe College, you know, but the problem is once they graduate, we're having a real hard time connecting them to skilled employment, which they need to qualify for permanent residence. The Canadian government is bringing in and encouraging, international students to come, and they are tying it to the dream of permanent residence, just as much as the education agents overseas. I mean, not as unethically, but, the suggestion is you come, you'll study, you stay. But the problem is that actually of the 100% of international students that want to stay, which is not 100% of international students, but out of the 100% that want to stay, all the research suggests that really our immigration plans and our economy can only sustain about 30% of them, in terms of overall immigration targets. So my concern has rapidly become, what about return on investment for these students who are being sold one thing and delivered another? So that is quite different from housing, of course, but that is the bigger problem that these students are facing. And I see it not working out for them constantly all the time, right? So it is a major ethical concern in terms of just bringing them all in, because we got to look at why they're coming, and they're coming for permanent residency. They're not coming for education. Education is incidental most of the time. So that's a concern that I have just from an ethics point of view. And I don't know how sustainable that's going to be for so long, because, news does get around, right?
Yeah, news does get around, so we'll see. And there'll be people that, say to friends, family members, whoever it is, hey, I went to London, or I went to, pick Ontario City here and had a rough time sort of figuring out, a place to be and finding reasonable rent, whatever it happens to be. So that's not a situation we want either. Mike, I want to ask you about something you mentioned earlier, but then we got to wrap this up, because I know that we're all kind of going against the clock here for everybody. But you mentioned, workforce issues and finding out people that can build these places. How big a part is that of this conversation, and are we being serious enough about that in the province of Ontario? Because if we want to build a whole lot of apartment buildings near Fanshawe, near Lambton, near Pickett College here, we need people that actually work on those and know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that has a couple components to it, sort of a domestic component where we're training Canadian citizens or Canadian permanent residents for those jobs. And I know Minister McNaughton, he's supposed to be the Minister of Labor, but really these days he's the Minister of Skilled Trades, for better or worse. So nobody can accuse Monty of not taking this issue seriously, since it's pretty much 100% of what he talks about. But there's also, bringing in international talent to the skilled labor pool. There is an immigration stream for that, but the numbers have been very, very modest. I know the provincial government wants more control over the immigration system, in part to increase that stream. So that, we could, interestingly enough, solve some of these housing issues on the international student side by those very international students coming in, if we bring in ones who are interested in going into the trades.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So hopefully folks are interested in going into the trades. Mike, Earl, this was fantastic. Great conversation, and sort of really looks at the issue very well. Thank you very much, both of you, for chatting today. Is there anything that either of you wanted to make sure the audience comes away with before we wrap up our conversation here?
I just point out, I would agree with Earl that, word does it get around. And I think this is going to influence Canada's international reputation if we don't get this right. I find I learn more about these issues from reading media reports in India than I do from reading media reports in Canada, that they are sort of hyper aware of this situation. So this isn't just sort of a local issue and one that's, dealing with London issue, but this, if we keep doing what we're doing, we are going to harm Canada's reputation on the world stage.
Earl,
I would only add that in terms of positive steps forward, at the end of the day, just because so much money is involved here, I think, the direction really does need to come from the federal government, because it's not going to come from the colleges who just seem to be immune from rules, and nor their provincial counterpart, MCU. I think, IRCC may have to step in and say, look, we're going to do something as drastic as impose quotas on the number of study permits that can be issued, that can be considered for a particular college. So, I mean, that's something that should be considered at this point, because otherwise it's just expansive.
Yeah, well, good thing for everyone to come away with and sort of take note of. Before I wrap up, I do want to say the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London, lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, luxury defined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Mike, Earl, thank you both so much for doing this. Good conversation. Appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
More of the Craig Needles podcast coming up later in the week at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.